promises of truth thou hast for me. Open mine eyes, illumine me. Spirit divine, love of the life.
Welcome to New Realities. This is Alan Steinfeld. And each week on this program, I talk to people who are really moving and evolving this culture to a new level of consciousness. And tonight's guest is someone who's been at it for a long time. His name is Steve Behrman. And if you don't know him, you might know his alter ego, Swami Beyond Ananda. He's just written a book with Bruce Lipton called Spontaneous Evolution. And he's also featured in the anthology Transforming Through 2012, which was edited by Deborah Gusti, who was a guest last week. So, Steve, thanks for being here.
Well, thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
You know, I have to say, Swami Beyond Ananda has been a big influence on me and my thinking, and maybe we can get, like, some words from him at first and then talk to, like, Steve, because, well, one of the things he would say is, you know, on this path of everyone looking out for number one and people letting go of their stuff, you have to look out for number two as well. That really stuck with me. And then I think
that stuck with me, too. I was walking down the street, and that's what happened.
It stuck with
me. It completely stuck with me. But that is why we have to actually drive our karma and curb our dogma at the same time.
So you don't step in it, right?
That's right. We do not want to step on anybody's dogma droppings.
Right. How do you take care of your dogma droppings?
Well, I think it's very, very important that we recognize that so much of what we perceive to be reality is just our beliefs. And what people believe is unbelievable. So I think, first of all, recognizing the difference between the big reality and our beliefs and perceptions, which tell us what we are thinking.
That's good. I mean, right now we're coming to a big nexus point, and I think it was you or maybe one of your disciples that says shift happens. So what kind of shift is hitting the fan as we speak?
Well, I think, first of all, we have shifted into a higher gear. Now, everybody is talking about 2012. You know, I am writing a new book. It is called 2012, The Secrets Revealed. It's coming out 2013.
Good.
It'll be a bit of a wait, but I think that I can say that really what this is all about is us releasing the old story, the residue that has been with us for a long, long time. Left over from the belief in survival of the fittest and the lowest common denominator. And we have to recognize that the next phase of human evolution is realizing that we are all connected. We are all one with the same one, the universal oneness. The universe has us surrounded. We might as well surrender.
That's true. Can you talk about your name? Because Ananda means bliss, so you are, in a way, beyond bliss. How's that?
Yes, you go to bliss, and I'm another 500 yards. You can't miss it.
So right beyond bliss is beyond Ananda.
That's right. That's right. I have learned to live beyond bliss because I used to get very, you know, everybody's talking about being in the now. Mm-hmm. It's stressful. It's now. It's very stressful. So the way that I have gotten around the stress of being in now is I have actually bought a condo in the future. And
you
so
did.
I am living in the future, calmly waiting for everybody else to catch up.
Oh, okay. Because I had a saying, you know, everyone's talking about be here now. I was saying was there then. And
that's what reincarnation is about, isn't it?
Was there then. Exactly.
Yeah, do you believe in reincarnation? I'm curious.
Do I? Actually, I do believe in reincarnation. I think I was just this person a second ago. But
You know, it's great to be with you again.
Thank you. That's it. We've had this conversation before, perhaps, in another dimension.
Yes, it's deja vu, I think it's called.
Deja vu.
And we have it in a parallel universe. And in fact, I have a cousin who lives in a parallel universe, and in fact, I just got a parallelogram from him.
Mm, Was it near Miami? Because that's sort of like a parallel universe. That's a different.
Well, yes. No, I think that's actually perpendicular to the rest of us. It's way, you know, kind of like, you know, how some of the, we talk about the higher states. That's one of the lower states. The higher states, I'm thinking Minnesota.
Right.
Very high state. Maine, another high state.
Yes. But the other
is a high state, but that is where your actual energy field, your aura, is gone.
So in the low states, you can't expect much being in a low state.
No, that's right. You can't. Ah, very good.
So how do we lift our states up? Because they seem to be stuck on the continent.
Well, you know what? I have to tell you something. The best way to avoid gravity is with levity. If gravity is bringing you down, then let levity lift you up. And you know what? We can always tune into the levitational pull. So if you sit very quietly and you imagine there's a big smile that is forming in the middle of your body, and this smile is curling everything upward, and the corners of your mouth are being pulled upward in a smile, that is what they call the levitational pull.
Okay, I'm going to do that exercise, and hopefully I'll be lifted maybe to Maine or some other higher state, right?
Oh, that's right, that's right. The corners of your mouth, very, very important. You know, people say, you know, I want to uplift humankind. I say, that's fabulous, but why don't you start by uplifting your own face first?
Right.
Everybody else will get the idea.
So that would be a face lift, would you say?
It would be a face lift and a faith lift, because you can lift your own face in goodness and in love. And when you do that, your face will lift. You'll actually create a smile on your face. That is the natural face lift.
So people go to you for faith lifting, huh?
Yes. In fact, I don't even charge.
But they look 100 times better after that lift, isn't it?
Oh, yes. Of course they do. Of course they do. The face is meant to be turned upward in the smile, not downward by gravity.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you a story. Can I tell you a story?
Ahead.
Okay, yes. There was two psychiatrists, and they had offices in the same building for 25 years. And after 25 years, they'd never met, you see. After 25 years, one of them looked young and upbeat, and the other one looked old and beat up. So they're in the elevator together. The one who looks old and beat up says, you know, you're a psychiatrist, right? And the other one goes, that's right. And he says, and I know you've been practicing for at least 25 years because I've seen your name. He says, that's right. He says, tell me, how can you spend 25 years listening to people's problems and look the way you do? And he said, who listens? So that is the secret to peace and equanimity.
Don't listen to other people's problems. Exactly.
Don't listen. You cannot possibly help them by listening to their problems. You can shake your head upside down, but let it go in one ear and out the other, because you don't, whatever somebody else's toxicity is going through, you don't want to take it poisonally.
That's right. That's right. Don't take it poisonally. The other great thing...
You don't have compassion for people. You do. But just because
you don't take it poisonally.
You don't dive in there with them.
Right. I mean, I also want to talk about that, the fact that, you know, I do this television show, and your great insight into television was something that really inspired me. Talk about television.
Well, you know, I have to be very, very blunt here. Now, of course, we're not talking about your network, but I have to say that in American media, there is really only one TV news network that is telling the truth about what they are broadcasting. And that network is CBS. We are broadcasting BS, and so if you want the CBS, you came to the right place, you see? So
right.
They're telling the truth. So,
but the whole idea of telling a vision to your friend, I think, is another important aspect of your teaching.
Well, you see, that's what I'm getting to, because this is why. If you decided that you don't like the brainwashing machine stuck on spin, and you don't like the current programming, turn off your TV and tell a vision instead. I tell a vision to you and you tell a vision to me, and we have healing and functional visions to step into And earlier we talked about stepping into something else.
Right.
This is better.
Right. So are you coming up with more material all the time based on the social paradigm and the situations in the world?
Well, you know, that is why we're in the material world, to get more material. And every year that I am in the material world, more material materializes. You know, right. Like this year. I mean, take the economy. Please.
Please. Right.
Yeah, you know, I it makes me nostalgic for the good old days when people robbed banks. Remember that?
Yeah, banks robbing people.
So yes, there's plenty of material out there. And, of course, you know, the material around America's President Obama, we had such great hopes, yes?
Yeah. What happened?
But I think the hopium is starting to wear off.
Mm.
And we recognize that if we really want political climate change, then we not only have to choose a new president, we have to choose a new precedent, which is governed of the people, by the people, for the people, where the government does our bidding, not the bidding of the highest bidder,
right,
which is what we have now.
Right. So Obama,
now, when you have the, you know, the bank bailout money in the United States, I'll tell you what happened. The bank bailout money, the banks were bailed out, and they immediately bought three big houses, the two houses of Congress and the White House.
Wow.
And when the banks are actually footing the bill, the government is going to be a little bit more user-friendly. Hmm?
Right. So everybody was losing their house, and the banks were buying houses.
Well, right. You know, it's called displacing persons. And it's part of the old economic system of domination. It's called the mining system. That's your goal. That's mine, that's mine, that's mine, that's mine, that's mine.
Mm-hmm. How do we change all that?
Well, I'm glad you asked that question. I have a three-step plan because, frankly, there's not enough time for 12 steps. So the first step is I am involved in my alter ego, Steve Behrman, will tell you more about this, in something called a transpartisan uprising. That is, people are waking up and wising up to see the elephant and the donkey in the living room, that the political parties really don't represent any of us. And as a matter of fact, they have outlived their uselessness. And so now we have a new political movement called the Transpartisan Movement. And you can find out more by going to Transpartisan, that's TRANS, Partisan, PARTISAN, .US, and find out more about how ordinary citizens can essentially become the cells of the new body politic. It's happening. The second thing is every state needs to be like North Dakota. And I don't mean just because it is a higher state, but because North Dakota was $1 billion in the plus this year because they have their own state bank.
Yes, and but the other thing about North Dakota is nobody lives there.
Money
so you
from
can't
the grassroots up.
Okay.
That's two.
Yes. Okay.
The third step is to legalize hemp. Because whatever you think about marijuana, and I have to say I only tried it once, but I didn't exhale. Whatever you have to say about marijuana, hemp is actually the crop that will actually regrow America from the grassroots up. It's fuel, it's food, it's building material.
Mm-hmm.
And it was made illegal because it was in competition with DuPont. Had nothing really to do with marijuana.
Is that why it was made illegal? And when was it made illegal?
Well, I think it was probably in the late 1930s. It's been illegal to grow hemp in this country. And every year, the Native Americans in South Dakota, every year they ceremonially, that's the word, grow a crop of hemp, and the DEA immediately comes and mows it down.
Hmm.
Do you think that's crazy?
No, I'm sure it happens in a lot of places. But
so I think that that's part of our new economy. Since the old economy is gone, the new economy has to be based on local self-sufficiency in food and in energy.
Right, as opposed to selfish efficiency.
Well, we've got plenty of that, you know, because if we have to make a shift right now, because yes, shift has happened, but and many people, of course, have been scared shiftless and they haven't been able to change. But if we want shift to continue to happen, we have to upshift our karma. We have to make changes ourselves, and we need to begin to live as if we really were cells in the body of an organism called humanity.
Mm. Yes, yes, that's where Steve's partner, Bruce Lipton, is so eloquent in speaking about humanity being the receptor sites and putting out new, taking in new information so we can change as one organism of which we are. A coherency is needed. So
that's right. And we have a beginning of that because, look, I am here. You are here. We are cohere. And if that isn't coherence, I don't know what is.
Okay. As opposed to incoherent, I would let you know if you were incoherent.
Oh, no. No. We both understand coherence.
Well, Swami,
that's good
thank
because
you.
We are listening to, you know, it's very interesting. We have this fear-based idea of homeland security because we are supposed to be afraid. And yet, our true security is in heartland security. That is the security that is in our hearts. Because in our heads, we've got beliefs that are separating. So we need to leave the static of the head for the ecstatic of the heart.
The ecstatic of the heart. I like that.
Yeah, because the more we expand our heart, the less we'll need to shrink our head.
Really? Because the head will be the same size as the heart. Is that it?
Well, that's right. Everything will be in proportion. You know, why are we trying to shrink our heads? Because people's heads have gotten too big. If you're expanding your mind, then you must expand your heart.
So by expanding our hearts, we'll equal the size of our heads and we'll be more at peace with the heart and the head.
I think we have to have head, heart, what is it called? Equanimity. They need to be in balance, the head and the heart. So I think that, you know, the people who are, you know, headed someplace, they need to actually remember to heart someplace as well.
Heart
there. If
you're
trying to get ahead, maybe you need to get a heart.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I think, Swami, your wisdom is what's needed in the world for people to have some levity instead of the heaviness that they think is there. And you've uplifted many people through your just your own wisdom, let's say.
Well, I've actually amused myself. I have uplifted myself many, many times. In fact, you know, people ask me about my guru. You know, actually, I am a totally self-taught Swami. I lifted myself up by my own bootstraps.
By your own bootstraps?
That's right. And I absorbed the wisdom of the cosmos through cosmosis.
But what was that moment of awakening, of enlightenment, where you really got who you were? Can you describe that?
Well, yes, I'll tell you what happened. You know, I was actually I was a seeker. And you know there's a seeker born every minute, right?
I know.
And to take him along the path. I was a seeker of wisdom, and in fact, I tried so many spiritual paths, I was pathological. I did mind expansion. I expanded my mind so much, I needed to go see a shrink. Yes.
Right.
And so at one point in my spiritual quest, I knew that I had hit bottom.
I woke up
one morning. I'll tell you what happened. I woke up one morning in a strange biker crash pad, and everything reeked of incense. And I looked around me, and the bikers had these orange leather vests and funny ponytails. I went, oh, my God, I've become a Hare Krishna. And at that point, I looked in the mirror. I looked at myself, and I started laughing. I achieved full realization. I was struck by enlightenment. And since that time, I have been practicing fundamentalism with the accent on the fun.
Right, fundamentalism.
Yes.
Anything more? Because I have another question before you
Okay,
go.
Well, how about if I answer the question before you ask it?
Okay, please.
Ask me if I'm psychic.
Please, okay.
Go ahead, ask me if I'm psychic.
Are you psychic?
I knew you were going to ask that. Okay. So now tell me the question so I can answer it.
What do you think of some of your rival gurus like Papaji? Have you had the honor of meeting Papaji?
No. Actually, I think that there's plenty of room for all kinds of spiritual teaching all across the spectrum. I've seen Papaji. I've not actually had a hand of him or anything like that, but I understand that somebody does. And I think he's a pull puppet, isn't he?
I don't know. I haven't been that close with him, right? Well, most of us are full puppets, actually, aren't they?
Well, you know, there's the ones that you have somebody stick their hand right up your behind. That is one kind of puppet. And then the other kind of puppet is the one that has things dangling and is being controlled from the top. So if you're a puppet, then you're being controlled by the top or being controlled by the bottom.
Like most people, I suppose, isn't it?
Yeah, but most people, you see, the thing is that most people don't even realize that their beliefs are what they're mistaking for reality. They don't see the strings. Mm. And so part of becoming that moment of enlightenment is when you begin to see the strings and recognize that we are all tied together.
So your enlightenment is no strings attached. Is that it?
Well, I think my alignment comes from the middle. Because everybody, talk about being self-centered, everybody in our center is ourselves.
So everybody's
self-centered. So that is where we are receiving the signals from the universal heart is in our own heart, you see. So we don't have to go outside of ourselves in order to realize the signal. It's right inside. It's like we are all one with the same one. If I'm one, you're one too. And what's more, each of us is totally unique, just like everybody else.
So does one and one make one, or does one and one make two?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
They are both true. They are both true. It just depends on whether you're looking at the math, or you're looking at the math and then the aftermath.
Oh, good one. Okay. Swami, thank you so much for giving us your darshan.
Oh, yes, and I hope you'll give it back.
I'll send it to you.
Okay, yes. People say, Swami, I went to bathe in your darshan. Listen, people leave a ring around it when they do that. So, clean it up.
Clean up the ring around the darshan. And
ring around the darshan. You remember that? That was always at the ashram. There was always a big deal. But you know what? This is how enlightenment is, right? Before enlightenment, do the laundry. Mm-hmm. After enlightenment, do the laundry, but it's 40% brighter.
Oh, I thought you were going to say do the laundry and have a cigarette, but no. Okay.
Well, whatever, you see. If enlightened people are having cigarettes, then it must be enlightened to have a cigarette.
Right. But do the laundry before enlightenment and after enlightenment.
Absolutely. As much as the rapture people say they're going to leave their clothes down here when they go, that'll give us extra clothes to wash.
Right. I mean, is there such a thing as laundry after enlightenment? Aren't we just like bathing in the light and wearing our light bodies?
Well, I don't know. I think while we're in the physical, I think we tend to perspire. Especially aspiring spiritual adepts, they tend to aspire, if you know what I mean.
Aspiring, perspiring adepts.
Well, I think that often when they're flagrant and fragrant, you have to make a change. And, I recognize that these days a lot of people have chemical insensitivities. You know what I mean? They cannot tolerate these strong smells, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so for those people, I have invented the world's first completely odorless cologne.
Odorless cologne?
An odorless cologne. I call it nonsense.
Oh, brilliant. Huh.
This product makes no sense whatsoever.
It's sort of like the Emperor's New Clothes, isn't it? That was all.
That's right. It's the emperor's new deodorant. We could call it.
That's a great marketing thing.
Yeah. So, that smells nothing. It won't cover up your natural odor because it has no smell of its own.
It's like water. It's like whatever you want to add to it, that's it.
That's right.
So people should use just water for deodorant, maybe. Or maybe that's what it is.
Well, I don't know. Water, yeah. Some people use water, yes.
Swami, it's great talking to you.
Have you listened to this? This conversation, have you listened to that part of the conversation? Oh, I started it, okay.
You started, but I mean, if there's any final words of wisdom or unwisdom or final words you'd like to share before we talk to Steve, let me know or say
it. Okay, well, look, I'll say this, that, you know, here we are, we're about to enter a new year on the threshold of perhaps finally holding some thresh. And so here's my invocation for the new year. You know, we are not here to earn God's love. We are here to spend it. Let's go for hell on earth, to heaven on earth, just for the hell of it.
Mm. Okay, and how do we do that?
Well, we do that, first of all, by blessing everything. Mm. Now, that is a challenge. It's a challenge. A driver cuts you off, right? You have to bless the driver. You have to say, bless you. And then he'll say, bless you too. And then one of you will say, well, go bless yourself. And the other one will say, go to heaven, you blessing blessed.
Mm. That will really uplift. Thank you. That is something to remember for sure.
That's right. That is how to have an uplifting conversation and transform. Only positive words.
And put everybody up instead of putting everybody down.
That's right. We need to good mouth people now and put them up. You know what's challenging? I'll tell you what's challenging. It's challenging to speak positive words of encouragement to our kids, and yet we have to. You walk downstairs, your kid is splayed up on the couch with video games. You have to speak positive words of encouragement. You have to say, what's right with you, you useful good or something?
Mm.
Now wipe that smile onto your face like that.
I get it. It's all for the upliftment of humanity, and we'll shift into a higher frequency, a higher state, a transformational moment. We are on the verge of this.
We are virgin. They're not yet done it. We are on the verge of reversioning as a new species.
So 2012 is the time for virgining. It's a new virgin territory, isn't it?
That's right. We seem to have conquered outer space, but we've kind of ignored inner space.
Mm.
And so inner space is the next frontier. Mm. Because everything that we are seeking is seek first the kingdom of God, and the kingdom of God is within.
Well,
around the islets of Langerhans, right down there.
It's kingdom of God. Where exactly within is it? Which part?
It's somewhere between the intestines and the esophagus.
That's where the kingdom of God is. I didn't know there was an... Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. It's because I'll tell you something. The kingdom of God is in every cell of our body.
Mm-hmm.
It is tuned to... Because, again, you know, our cells are kind of like... They're like tuning forks. And when there is something that's pleasant and something that is harmonious, and there's no harm in harmony, when there's something harmonious and every cell is oming and humming along with all of that harmony, then everything is happy. It's buzzing. It's a good buzz. So that's why that kingdom can be accessed in every cell of our body. We are all potentially attuned into that. All we have to do is learn to tune in.
There's a good buzz in every part of our body then, huh? Every cell is capable of getting buzz.
In order to tune in, we have to tune out the static, because so much of the media inundates us with so much toxic BS that our skeptic system is overflowed.
Right.
And it causes something called truth decay. Yes?
Right.
Because thought particles tend to get caught between the ears, yes?
And which particles?
Four out of five transcendentists recommend mental flossing every day to prevent truth decay. So if you want clarity of mind, imagine you have your fingers about 4 inches from your ears, and then gently go back and forth with this invisible floss, and you will clean out any excess philosophy that got stuck in your head.
Brilliant. I like that. I'd like to see that one on paper. That's a good one. That's a brilliant little.
Well, we could all be flossing every day.
Yeah, mental floss. That's good. Right. You're right. You're absolutely right. Why don't we talk to Steve for a while? But thank you, Swami, again.
Oh, well, okay. I will relinquish the microphone. Hold on. I've got to find my carpet. And hold on. He's in the bathroom. Wait a minute. Let me get him.
He's always in the bathroom when you need him, that guy, you know? And
okay. Wow, I'm back. Okay. Hi there, Alan.
Thank you. He does it the best, that guy, because so many people can't quite get the humor and the spirituality together. Either they're cynical or whatever, but like that's the perfect message, you know? I mean, how'd you come up with that guy?
Well, you know, I think maybe he came up with me. I say I got struck by lightning during a brainstorm. The name flew into my head one day, and a couple of years later, I created a magazine with a friend in Ann Arbor, Michigan, called Pathways, and it was one of the first local holistic publications. And we both recognized, my friend and I, that people tend to take their spirituality very seriously, and so we decided we needed humor, and Swami Beyantananda was the character who appeared. And so he first appeared in print in 1980, he first appeared in performance in 1985, and the rest is mystery.
Right. Is he still performing?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we are just about to... where are you located? Are you in New York?
I'm in New York.
Where are you?
New York City.
Are you everywhere?
Are you coming to... I'm everywhere. But coming to New York City at all?
We'll be coming to New York City in June. We'll keep you posted. May or June. We have shows coming up in Marin County, California, San Jose, Santa Cruz. You can go to our website, which is wakeuplaughing.com, wakeuplaughing, and if you want Swami to come to your town, just send us an email, and as my friend Caroline Casey says, co-operators are standing by.
Well, maybe you could come. I'm doing something with Lynn McTaggart in June in New York. Maybe you could sort of be part of that kind of a...
But I could be part of the McTagg team.
Yeah, get tagged, yes. Yeah, she has a new book out, and I'm going to be interviewing her, but I think we're going to do an evening with her in New York, and we'll see. We'll be in touch. But
well, that's good. Yeah, she's we quote her extensively, Bruce and I, in our Spontaneous Evolution book, and she's done some very extraordinary work in explaining deep physics to the layperson. And, you know, the idea that, you know, the more you get into physics, the more metaphysical it really is.
Mm-hmm.
You start to realize that what we're calling reality is pretty shaky. That really, there's no such thing as matter. It's really very rapidly moving energy. And so, we are so in our scientific materialist world, we're so clinging to this idea of material and physicality, and yet Albert Einstein said that the field is the sole governing force over the particle. And so we've been very focused on the particles, and we have neglected the field, which is why things are looking as screwed up as they do.
Right, and Lynn wrote that great book about the field, and it does come down to, like, we are living in a field of energy. And I think, like, things like the internet and wireless communication are giving us new symbols so we can realize what the ancients have always known, that there is just energy. But now other people are able to actually visualize it because of our technology. Does that make sense?
But yeah, I think that that gap is closing. That, you know, it's interesting, just as physics, if you go deep enough into physics, it's yielding into metaphysics. Our other sciences of biology and chemistry are leading us to the foundation as well, which is energy. Energy. It's at the bottom of everything. Energetic medicine.
Right. But, I mean, in the form of energy, and I want to talk about evolution a little bit because I've studied evolution thanks to Bruce Lipton's inspiration and his Lamarckian background. But he says that, I don't know exactly what he says about it, but it does seem like evolution does seem to be spontaneous. It's like there's something and then there's something else. Is this where we're going? Like, there's like no in-between species. There's nothing in between, like an elephant and a dog. There's just an elephant and a dog. It seems like it's quantum in its steps of movement. And how, what do we expect to be the next quantum leap in evolution? How does, what do we expect to see about ourselves as we evolve?
Well, let's go backward and then we can go forward to look at what evolution has been. They're now calling these phases of evolution, they're calling it punctuated equilibrium, which is, as you had suggested, that things go along pretty much the same for a long period of time, and then there is some kind of shock to the system, some big change, and all of a sudden there are huge and unforeseen changes that take place. Another word for this is emergent, that when populations reach a certain level of density, there's a new structure that emerges. And it could be seen when you put fish in, let's say you have a fish tank and you have a couple of fish swimming around. When you put in a certain critical mass number of fish, all of a sudden the fish in relation to one another begin to swim in this very predictable pattern. Put more fish in and they begin to swim in another very predictable pattern. So we can see that for billions of years, the only life on Earth was single-cell organisms. And at some point, because the population of single-cell organisms began to become so dense, there needed to be a graduation to another level of organization, and then we had multi-cell organisms. And, of course, multi-cell organisms evolved into very complex ones like you and me. We have we're communities of upwards of 50 trillion cells. So the next phase, if we are to extrapolate the next phase of human evolution, because evolution always involves increased connectedness, efficiency, and awareness, that the next phase of human evolution is recognizing that we are each and all cells in this new body, this superorganism called humanity. And once we have that realization, we can recognize that it makes absolutely no sense for us to be struggling against other healthy cells, that everybody has something that they're gifted to do, that they're called to do, and in alignment, we are all doing the right thing. And so in recognizing our connectedness, we can isolate the sociopathogens in the body politic, those forces that really are looking out only for number one and leaving us plenty of number two. But most right. of us are not that way.
But how, but what, okay, so we come together as a single humanity, a single organism, and then Bruce, because it's based on his fractal biology, led me to believe, and maybe this is my projection, that once we become that singularity, then we can hook up with other singularities and form a galactic community of cells. At least that's where I feel, because life is emergent throughout the whole universe. And I'm not joking. I really do think 2012 is that sort of hookup. What do you think?
Well, you know, I think that's one of the key pieces of Bruce's genius is to not stop by saying that, well, yes, we're all cells in the body of humanity, but recognizing that that on scale, planet Earth is simply another organism in another cell in a much, much larger galactic organism. You know, it's interesting, but if we look at the scale of human beings and human life, we are exactly in the middle between the very largest bodies, the universe and the micro and the macro. We are located smack dab in the middle. What do you know? So we are, in a sense, the mediators between the very, very, very infinitely large and the infinitesimally small. We are right in the middle.
So I think our hooking up with other species, and this is my, because I do a lot of shows about this, is the next step of our spontaneous evolution. I mean, do you agree with that? I mean,
well, I think we have a step here. We first have to make the step for humanity to survive. So, you know, we've been so focused on survival of the fittest individuals that we've neglected to see that our species survival is up for question right now. Mm-hmm. So if we are to look at our survival of our species, it really means, because we can no longer have this autoimmune dysfunction called warfare or predatory economics, mm-hmm. We have to recognize that we are, as a species, we have to start thinking like a species, thinking about the macro, because in the process of thinking about the macro, the individual will thrive. I mean, think about how much easier life would be and how much more we could turn our attention to other things if we weren't spending our energy fighting other people.
So how do we do the change? I mean, what do we need to do? I mean, it's great to talk about it, but what has to be done?
Well, I think on the serious side, you know, one of the most exciting projects, I'm involved in two very exciting projects. One has not launched yet, and it relates to regularly scheduled daily worldwide meditations that people can join in. But the one that has launched is my work with Transpartisan Alliance. And my associate, Joseph McCormick, founded an organization called Reuniting America, where he brought together the leaders of very diverse groups, from Christian Coalition to MoveOn.org. And after having success with that, he's been bringing together groups of very diverse, politically diverse individual citizens and creating essentially councils, you know, very similar to the tribal councils where people sat around in a sacred circle and they spoke their minds and their hearts until there was nothing left but the obvious truth. And so Joseph has been doing some wonderful work. He's got his experimental group right now is in Seattle, Washington. He's gotten people from all across the political spectrum together and being pulled away from the influence of toxic media. These people have come up with extraordinary wisdom and extraordinary conclusions. So again,
like
if you go to our website, transpartisan.us, you'll see some of the things that these people came up with.
Well,
and the reason why it's hopeful is because we are in the process of emerging from this trans of dominate or be dominated, and we see that that's not the formula for success for our species. The formula for our success is we're all in this together. And we have many, many, many people and organizations that are speaking and doing along those lines. And what's needed now is a unifying movement so that the people from really all across the holistic spectrum and the political spectrum can begin to work together at the local level, first of all, to actually weave a generative, self-sufficient economy at the grassroots level. Sounds like it's going backward. It's really going forward. and begin to step away from political ideologies and convenient beliefs and come together as ordinary citizens to discover the truth together rather than buying packaged truth.
It's like idiotologies, right?
Idiotology, yes, exactly.
Right. But what's the name of that website again?
Transpartisan, T-R-A-N-S, partisan.us.
U.S.
You'll see Joseph has an article there, and I have an article, and you can join our organization, no cost. You can make a contribution financially to move the work forward. We'll be coming out with our first ebook in January, so if you sign up, we'll keep you posted.
I mean, is that your work in the world? I mean, I'm not sure. I know you do this other thing, but what do you actually do, and what do you really how do you spend your day?
Course, I spend my time swamiing. I think that for most of the past 25 years, my primary day job has been performing and writing comedy as the swami. My background's political science, and so all of these years I've been studying and looking and paying attention and looking at the holistic political conversation in contrast to, you should excuse the expression, the assaholistic political conversation, which is what we have. And so I began working, another practical extension of my work with Bruce Lipton, because in Spontaneous Evolution, which I highly recommend you take a look at, you can order it on my website, Wake Up Laughing. You can order it on Amazon. Go check it out. The work that we started in Spontaneous Evolution, which is essentially to spark an evolution, to spark an awakening, that work is being continued in my work with Joseph McCormick, because we're bringing the two sides of the political, the left and right together to discover each of them discovering the functional aspect of progressive and the functional aspect of conservative. Mm-hmm. If we look at nature, life is progressive and life is conservative. Life requires growth, of course. The primary impulse of life is growth. However, protection is required. So growth is progressive. It's moving forward. And protection is conservative. It's protecting. It's holding back. These are both very, very natural. What we have in our system right now, because the system is based on the dominator, you know, we've never really gotten over that. In spite of the brilliance of our founding fathers in America, we've never really gotten over this lowest common denominator idea. And so the dominator has, after 230 years since the Declaration, the dominator has reinstituted itself. And so the only antidote to Big Brother is bigger brotherhood.
Right.
In other words, it requires that we, the people, begin to say, you know what, if we look at the Declaration of Independence, we are the ones who we own the legacy. It's been given to us. We kind of let it slip out of our hands because it's been more convenient to let daddy do it, to let some human authority do it. But as we're coming to see, the ruling class gets an F. The ruling class has flunked ruling class. And
right.
So realize it's up to us right now. That's the evolutionary awakening.
But can you give us one concrete thing or more, I mean, maybe you have, but that we can do to start this getting out of the sleep that we've been in?
Well, there's three things. First thing is cultivate evolutionary awareness. And this is very, very important because in reading Biology of Belief and reading Spontaneous Evolution, people will begin to understand how it is that we mistake our perceptions for reality and that we humans are much, much, much greater, much more capable than we've been led to believe. And as we begin to look at this, we can have a lot of compassion for other people because we recognize, and for ourselves, because we recognize that so much of who we are, culturally particularly, is programmed. It's based on the fears of our ancestors that have been projected through nuance, through spoken words, through unspoken, through body chemistry, through cultural habits.
Exactly. That's why I call my show New Realities. Then we have a caller on the line, Tommy from Tennessee. He wants to ask you a question because I think he's been a big fan of yours. Oh, Tommy, are you there? Tom?
Tommy, can you hear me?
Yeah, Tommy, are you there?
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Hello?
Yes, you're on. Go ahead, ask Swami or
Steve. Okay, yes. Now, I was just listening in there. Very interesting, Swami, there. You got a nice sense of humor, and it's much refreshing and appreciated in this crazy world we've got going on here. You guys have are on to something there, and it just sparked up quite a few things in me as you were talking there.
Do you have a question?
Well,
what did it spark in you?
Oh, well, I guess you're short on time, but it sparks up the fact that there is a far graver situation going on here with the construct of our life. To actually get people to unite in any kind of harmony that has been through the divide and conquer agenda over our consciousness. You can't really, and I'm not saying you can't, it's coming about through the upliftment that's going on now, but you cannot really get two people together to do anything about anything. You could get 2 million people to march on Pennsylvania Avenue in Washington, D.C. against a tax protester day, for example, and they fail to produce any significant results and simply a time waster because the governing forces ruling the world, they love protesters, and so nobody gets anywhere. It's proven that a million children, Swami, and you may know this, a million children singing the same song at the same time directly affects the magnetic radiation from the sun. You cannot hardly get anyone together, and this is what's been done to the divide and conquer, and this is where we're going in a unity consciousness.
Okay,
and this has
Tom,
been a real,
let's see,
real thing with me to figure out, and okay. Of course, I think
Tom.
I can kind of go through it and explain
okay.
it. But
wait, Tom,
but
Tom, we're almost out of time. Let Steve just respond to that. But thank you for that question. So go, Steve. You have a comment?
Yeah, I think that the media does not report the evolutionary uprising, and people are the fastest growing political designation right now is independent. That people are waking up and wising up to the divide and conquer, to the dueling dualities, to the duopoly that's manipulating us and has manipulated us. And, you know, it doesn't really take even a majority of people waking up. It takes just a small group of very intensely dedicated people to wake everybody else up. And so that's what's happening right now. It's not being reported in the news. Because, first of all, the news isn't looking for it, and number two, the news doesn't want to find it.
And I
so
think that's a big point.
We have to make our own news, as Scoop Nisker used to say.
I think that's why we're doing. That's why I'm doing this kind of program on radio and on television and my website, New Realities, because this is the news that is uplifting people and that. It's the balance for all those forces. I agree with Tommy. There does seem to be some deep, dark, heavy forces that want to maintain the separation. But I think it's, in a way, too late for that. I think the change is happening. We can see the dawn. I think so. And I think the planet is going to change in major ways. And I think 2012 is a very positive, uplifting time in our history as a species. So thank you,
Tom. Well, I think that there's definitely something going on. It's hard to even think back a few years ago how different things are now. And, of course, like anything else, I mean, this is a healing crisis of sorts. And the things that are not workable, they're falling by the wayside. We're finding that in our own lives individually, and we're finding that in our institutions. We have this this WikiLeaks thing that's going on. And What is that except the truth or pieces of the truth seeping out? The container that they have, the structure, cannot hold. You cannot keep the lid on energy that wants to expand. And the status quo, by definition, is seeking to keep a lid on this expansion, and they succeed in the short run, but not in the long run.
Yeah, I think it's very exciting times. I think I think the internet, as your partner Bruce Lipton said, is the nervous system of humanity coming together. So we have a cohesive nervous system where we're all the parts, all the organs are in touch with each other. And this is a next leap that we're moving to. We're just about out of time. So thank you and the Swami for being such beautiful spokespeople for this transition. Any final words or wisdom that you would like to?
Well, thank you so much, Alan, for having both of us. And again, if anybody wants to find out more about what we're doing, Swami's schedule, wakeuplaughing.com. Send me a note there. Say hi. And let me see if the Swami has one more thing to say, okay?
Okay, please. Thank you, Steve,
okay.
For your
You know what? We are here. This is our purpose in life. Our purpose in life is to regrow the garden from the grassroots up and have a heaven of a time doing it.
Wow. Thank you,
so
Swami.
Namaste.
Namaste, and have a good namaste to you.
And namas go, okay?
Yes.
May the Fars be with you.
Okay, the Fars is with us for sure. That's Steve Behrman and his beautiful alter ego, Swami Beyondananda, who's been a big influence on me and New Realities. If you want to hear this program again, you can go to BBS Archives or go to my website, newrealities.com. Email me at newrealities@earthlink.net. Thanks for listening and hope to hear from you and listen to you next week. Call in next week and let me know what you're thinking.
And again, see.